You are going to love my next guest. His name is Christopher Strom. Now, Chris is a former U.S. Marine and retired sergeant with the NYPD Intelligence Division. In October 2007, he was recruited by the Joint Improvised Explosive Device Defeat Organization, a government agency that devised top-secret strategies for combating IEDs in Iraq and Afghanistan. As the lead tactical debriefing officer, he participated in over 110 combat missions and 91 captures of high-value targets in southern Iraq and performed more than 200 battlefield interrogation. Chris details his journey in his best-selling book, Brooklyn to Baghdad, an NYPD intelligent cop fights terror in Iraq. You do not want to miss this interview with Chris Strom, next on the CJ Evolution podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Patrick here, host and creator of the CJ Evolution podcast, a podcast for you, the criminal justice professional. If you're a longtime listener, welcome back. If you're new to the show, welcome. We know you're going to love the content and the amazing guests like Chris Strom, who's coming up pretty soon. A big shout out to all the brave men and women working in the criminal justice field, whatever you were doing, wherever you were at. Thank you for doing it. Remember, you are honored, cherished, and above all, you are loved. Keep your head up high. We will come through this stronger and more resilient. And if you love the show, and I know you do, head over to Apple Podcasts, give us that rating and review, that five-star review. We sure would appreciate it. Folks, if you love coffee, and I know the majority of you do, you're working in the criminal justice field, duh, then you're going to love the products from Four Sigmatic. Everything from coffees to elixirs to cocos, they have it all. I'm a huge fan, as you know, of the Lion's Mane Mushroom Coffee. Yes, I said mushrooms, the good mushrooms, gives me that energy, clarity, and zip that I need, personally, to get me through the day. I am willing to bet you are going to love their coffee, and it doesn't taste like mushrooms. It tastes like regular coffee, only better, in my opinion. Head over to cjevolution.com. You're going to see a link to Four Sigmatic, and you're going to get 15% off of your purchases using the promo code CJEVO. Enjoy. Folks, I want to tell you about my good friends at Detecticam. Now, this company is doing amazing things for our brave men and women who serve in uniform, whether at the military or first responders. They're offering mobile threat detection that fits in the palm of their hands, detecting illicit drugs, explosives, now COVID-19. This app-based technology is must-have technology for your troops. Head over to cjevolution.com. You're going to see a link to Detecticam. See how they can help keep your troops safer.
This is a national healthcare alert from the 24/7 Diabetic Health Hotline. If you, a family member, or a loved one has diabetes, listen closely. Now, regardless of your age, if you have insurance, you may qualify to receive diabetic testing supplies with little to no out-of-pocket cost. Get free delivery, free information, and all the paperwork is handled by our accredited suppliers for free. Call the 24/7 Diabetic Health Hotline now for details. Toll free at this number. But wait, there's more. If you call right now, you could get a meter upgrade. In addition, we'll give you a free pair of diabetic socks as our special gift to you. Regardless of your age, if you suffer with diabetes and have insurance, you may qualify to get free delivery of your supplies.
800-443-1549. 800-443-1549. 800-443-1549. That's 800-443-1549.
Do you know someone with a drug or alcohol problem? Get help right now. Insurance may cover everything. Stop the drug and alcohol nightmare. Are drug and alcohol problems hitting you too close to home? Get help right now. Insurance may cover everything.
800-210-7907. 800-210-7907. 800-210-7907. That's 800-210-7907.
On to the show with Christopher Strom. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. I am so excited to have my next guest on the show, Christopher Strom. He's a former U.S. Marine and retired sergeant with the NYPD Intelligence Division, an elite unit that he's going to talk about. He's also an author of an amazing book that I just got done reading that you got to read. It'll be in the show notes, Brooklyn to Baghdad, an NYPD Intelligence Cop Fight Terror in Iraq. Chris, are you there, sir?
I am here, Patrick.
Well, thank you for being on the show, brother. I appreciate it. And thank you for your service in law enforcement. You had a decorated career with NYPD, but also your country. And we're going to talk about that. But what made you want to become a police officer? What made you want to, you know, first be a police officer? But I know you were a former Marine, like I said. What made you want to go that route?
You know, I think it was an easy pick for me in terms of careers. I mean, I did the Marine Corps, and I kind of liked having that kind of structure in my life. And I, you know, I saw the NYPD, and, you know, I remember as a kid watching all the cop shows like everybody else. And I was just like, that looks really, really cool. You know, that looks like something that I would want to do, you know, running around chasing bad guys. And it just had like that allure to me, something that I was hoping that I would be somewhat good at. And it turns out, you know, I was pretty effective in my job once I finally got hired on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you were very effective. I mean, you were one of the lead guys, interrogators in NYPD, and you built quite a reputation for yourself. I mean, we were talking a little bit before we started, Chris, about, you know, all the crap that's going on, the environment now in law enforcement, the war on cops. I mean, let's say what it is. I mean, it is a war on cops. I mean, where do you think, where are we going with this, Chris? I mean, you spent a lot of time in law enforcement, probably talk to a lot of your friends that are still on the job. And where are we heading with this? Because it seems like every time you turn on the news, cops are getting assaulted. There's defund movements going on. I know NYPD just cut, well, I think $1 billion out of their budget. I mean, what the hell is going on?
Yeah, it's a tough road for law enforcement in general. I do keep in touch with a lot of my friends in the NYPD. And even the guys in the intelligence division, and it's a tough road. If you're in uniform, especially, you know, with the advent of the iPhone or the camera phone, it's inescapable. Everybody is out there really to have that moment where they can catch you doing something that they feel in their mind is not correct. And you know, again, as you know, it's funny, we were talking, as you say, earlier in the show, before the show rather, you know. They catch that one moment, and you know there might be a whole 5 minutes of this personal interaction with the police versus whoever this person might be, but they're only showing the last 10, 20 seconds, which has erupted over the course of time, and everything else has seemed to fail, whatever it might have been, and you know, starting out with verbal, and then from verbal maybe to physical, and you know, and on and on and on. So they don't see all the good things that cops do. So to your point, I don't know where this is going to end. I'm really hoping that after the election, things are going to change, because I really do believe certain people in politics, which I know this doesn't come as a shock to you, but I think certain people are fomenting this type of environment and hatred toward the police. And moreover, I think some of the people that are involved in these movements, Black Lives Matter, they would do well to actually do some investigation and find out who these people really are, who's funding these people, and what their actual, you know, goal is in terms of, you know, running around and causing all kinds of problems.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. You know, not only, you know, some politicians, and but some of the media too. I mean, I had a buddy that was on that I was talking to a while ago, Chris, and he told me really something that really kind of resonated with me. He said, you know, remember, Patrick, when I was growing up, we're kind of the same age, and I remember Walter Cronkite, you know, coming on the news and, you know, given the news, you never knew what his political affiliation was. You never knew where he stood on issues. He just delivered the news, and it was up to you to formulate what you wanted to believe in or not. You just don't see that anymore. And to your point, I think, you know, parts of the media are definitely fanning the flames with this anti-police movement. And like you said, definitely some politicians out there. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, what happens, you know, after the election, and, you know, what the direction of, you know, because I think police, I mean, a lot of it is, what's their role now, man? What are they supposed to be doing out there?
You know, it's one of these things where I'm really having a hard time believing it, because, you know, it's not the police department that I'm from or that you're from. And, you know, I worked in, I worked all over the city, especially after I got into the intelligence division, but the one precinct I worked in before I got into the intelligence division was this great little precinct called the 76 precinct in Brooklyn. And it had its share of problems, but the community loved the police. I mean, it was not uncommon for store owners to drop off a pizza or drop off a homemade baked pie. And people would be like, in New York City? And I'm like, yeah, they would come in. We had regulars that would come in. They would bring coffee. I mean, it was, you know, so when I see that this whole environment is being fomented and that everybody hates the police, I just can't even imagine that, because it was such a different experience for me. And my heart really breaks for the guys and girls now that have to go out there and be subjected to this herd mentality that the police are bad and that the police are racist and they have nothing better to do to pick one group over another, because that's just how they start their day and that's how they finish their day. I mean, it's insanity.
Yeah. And I do think, and I talk about this a lot on my show, I do think, maybe I'm just naive, but I think the majority of Americans out there support police. I think they're afraid to voice their support in some instances. But you and I know, Chris, that taking away police only hurts the neighborhoods that really need police. And it doesn't hurt the politicians that have gated communities and have, you know, security details. What advice would you give somebody who wanted to get into law enforcement right now?
You know, that's tough. I don't know. You know, it really would depend on the department and things like that. I mean, you know, I'm partial to New York. I was a cop in New York for over 20 years. So I love the NYPD. I love cops in general, period. I don't think there's a finer group of people between the police and the military. They're both phenomenal people that volunteer to do something that most people wouldn't do. But I don't know if I was, to be honest with you, if I would tell my son, and I'm not in New York, so it's an easy call right now, that I would say, hey, you know, I think you should take the civil service test or give it this Saturday, and this way you can be a cop and be abused for the next 20 years. I mean, barring any change. Yeah. But for me, it's something that if you like having a different day every day, if you like to solve problems, if you like to help people, if you like chasing the bad guy, you know, running away from you who just, you know, bumped some old lady and stole a pocketbook. I mean, the level of satisfaction of actually doing something that's meaningful is really hard to, it's really hard to replace with anything else.
Yeah. And thank God for the people that are still, you know, wanting to get into the profession, you know, because there's still people that want to get into it. I mean, I think recruitment numbers are down, you know that. So you progress through the ranks of NYPD. You become one of the member. You become a member of the Elite Intelligence Division. Become one of the most top interrogators on the force. How did you develop that skill, Chris? Because I got to be honest. I mean, I was a detective for a while at one time. I think I was a decent interrogator, but I think that some cops have the ability to do that. And I know you can learn some of this stuff, but some cops have it and some don't. So how did you develop that skill? Because a lot of cops, you know, don't have that skill.
Yeah, that's true. Communication and being a good listener is not always the same thing.
No.
I tell you, I was very blessed that in my life. Let me be honest with you. In the beginning, I was a horrible listener. Mm-hmm. So I'll give you an example. I would arrest somebody, and the person would be in the cell. And for whatever it was, and it was generally a felony, you know, gun or stolen car or robbery, whatever it was. And this person is talking to me from the cell. And I'm at a desk that's probably no more than maybe, I don't know, 5, 7, 10 feet at the most. And he's going, listen, I got something I want to tell you. And I would put up my hand almost like I was telling him to stop. I'm like, listen, I got 30 pieces of paperwork to fill out. Unless you want something to drink or eat or you have to use the bathroom, shut the heck up. I'm not interested. And I was a hawk in the beginning, and that's how I was. And so I didn't see the big picture. Fast forward, I got into different specialty units. And when I got into the intelligence division, I got to work around some really, really gifted investigators, people that they write books about, people's books that get turned into movies. One particular person I call my best friend and mentor is this fellow by the name of Tommy Dades or Thomas Dades. Mm-hmm. And he wrote an amazing book called Friends of the Family. And this guy was bar none the best interrogator and the most knowledgeable person I've ever seen. So I've said all that to say I had a case, and to make a long story short, the informant that I was working with got rearrested for a drug offense. I know that might be shocking to some people in your audience that people that are junkies that are your informants sometimes get rearrested, but this guy did. And now the problem becomes I need to get this guy out of the prison so I can talk to him. So I'm complaining about it, or I'm talking out loud about it. And one of the detectives that worked for me at the time was this fellow, Tommy Dates. And he goes, what's going on, Chris? And I tell him the story. He goes, no problem. Hold on one second. Gets on the cell phone, makes a phone call. He goes, come on, let's go. I go, where are we going? He says, we're going down to the Rackers Bureau. We're going to pick up a takeout warrant and drive over to Rikers Island and get this guy out and debrief him. I'm like, holy crap. So this is a whole world that's foreign to me in terms of, you know, making phone calls, building relationships within the district attorney's office, the U.S. attorney's office. And this mentoring by this gentleman, Tommy, saved me. And my career went from being, I probably would have been okay, but it went from where it was to like sky high. And I owe a lot of that to people like Tommy, like other investigators, Jimmy Harkins, people that actually showed me a better way. How to talk to people, how to conduct an interrogation, not like what you see in the movies, not like what you see on 48 Hours, where some of these people can't get past the Miranda rights when they talk to these people.
And you made a good point, you know, that a lot of people, I know I'm kind of digressing a little bit, but you made a good point about movies and television shows. That's the view that a lot of people have of law enforcement, and that is Hollywood, folks. It's Hollywood. It's for show. It's not depicting real things 90% of the time. I love how you say in your book, you have to be very good at judging character. I mean, I know that's central in law enforcement, but you also say the keys to interrogating someone is able to tell things right away within 30 seconds. You say one is if he or she is a good person, and two, if they're guilty of, he or she are guilty of the, what they're accused of. And again, I know that's simplistic in nature, but that really is central to, like you said, to be a good interrogator, right?
Yeah, I mean, listen, you're doing a snapshot psychological profile on this person. You may just be meeting this person contemporaneous to an arrest, or this could be somebody that, you know, that he's been rearrested many times, and so you have some bona fides and some of his background on some of the things he did. So you're going in there sometimes with a lot of information, a lot of human intelligence about this person, what his foibles and weaknesses are that you can exploit to your advantage, and sometimes you're going in there cold. And you have never met this person, and it might actually be his first brush with the criminal justice system. You know, there's a whole array of things that go on in an interrogation.
Do they still, did you see, I mean, remember the old good cop, bad cop routine, Chris? I mean, did you see a lot of that when you were still on the job, when it came to
interrogation? I did see that. And it's a technique that's so worn out that it's actually insulting to the person you're interrogating, because believe me, if
they pick up on it.
Yeah. I mean, listen, this is the other thing I say to people. If you go into this interrogation room and think that you're the smartest person in the room, that's the wrong mindset. There's a lot of people that I interrogated that had doctor's degrees, were medical doctors, engineers, things like that. And when you lose people, when you go in there and you're like, I'm Chris Strom, I'm the greatest, or you know, I'm Patrick Fitzgibbon, haven't you heard of me? Like, that attitude is international. Like, people are people. When you insult somebody, when you first meet them, instead of trying to build a rapport and go on from there, you're done, because people shut down. They get insulted, and they're just not going to talk to you. They're going to be like, who is this guy? Like, he's really a jerk.
Well, and I love what you said about becoming, you know, one of the top interrogators that you became. But it's really about, you know, surrounding yourself with the right group of people, mentors, coaches, people that are going to take you under their wing. And that's pretty much in everything, but that's a very applicable in law enforcement. I talk to a lot of people, as you do, Chris, and people say, well, you know, why is that cop, you know, such an asshole, or they're not a good interrogator or whatever. They're not a good investigator. Well, look who they're surrounding yourself with, but, you know, probably other idiot cops that aren't doing very well. So you are who you surround yourself with, right?
I agree 100%. And, you know, when I first came on in the NYPD, people in the NYPD have a certain way of doing things. I wouldn't say it's unique in the NYPD, but rest assured, if you told somebody that they were under arrest, and I'm going back into the late 80s and during the 90s, there's no way anybody would raise their hand to a police officer, because they knew if they did that, that was going to be they were still going to get arrested regardless. And they were probably very likely going to go to the hospital before they went to central booking. So, you know, and again, thank God, you know, they didn't have the camera phones, because again, they wouldn't show that very first part of the encounter with this person. They would show the violent encounter that unfortunately, is sometimes part of policing.
Yeah.
So, but there are people that, you know, that we all know that are like, that's their go-to move, so to speak. Like, they can't convince this person, like, come on, man, we're going to get you in. We're going to get you processed. You'll be out by tomorrow morning. We'll even get you something to eat. It's not that big of a deal. Versus turn around, you jerk, put your hands behind your back. And, you know, like, you already insulted the guy. He knows he's under arrest. And now you're making him feel worse and angry all at the same time. So it's like those types of things. It's a learning process. A lot of it is fear. Let's be honest. When you're out there and this guy is, you know, I like to think I'm pretty physically fit. But, you know, this guy is 200 and some odd pounds. And, you know, maybe he just got out of prison.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, he's cock diesel. And now you're like, can you do me a favor? Can you turn around and just put your hands behind your back? Because, you know, if you got to roll with this guy, it's going to take time. And you're going to have to call for additional units. And who's getting in a car accident on the way to come help you? It's like, it's crazy. So, you know, that policing has changed quite a bit. It has changed a lot.
Yeah. And I always learned as a young officer that, you know, your greatest weapon is your mouth. You know, he can keep you out of trouble or get you into trouble. Not that, you know, you have to use force sometimes, and I get that, but communication skills. And that's why you became, you know, top interrogator. I mean, what kind of, for people listening out there right now, Chris, that, I mean, have you know, how can they become better interviewers and interrogators? You gave a lot of good tips. Any other tips or suggestions you'd give to the listener?
Well, the rapport is essential. Mm-hmm. When you walk into a room and people that, you know, are not involved in law enforcement, this will sound weird to them. Even somebody that was involved in some kind of violent street encounter or whatever it was, he was selling drugs, he had guns. When you come into the room and you introduce yourself and you stick your hand out to shake this person's hand, you're setting the tone, because human nature is a condition. Like I said, it's international. It doesn't really matter what your background is. You're showing some level of respect. So that's the go-to for me. Can I get you something to drink? Or sometimes I just walk in with a cup of water, or I might, you know, I just walk in there with them. I'm like, here, this is for you. I didn't know if you're thirsty. And then I ask them, are you hungry? And I'm like, tell me a little bit about yourself. And people are like, why do I give a crap about who this guy is? And again, you're trying to build up a picture of this guy. Again, if this is your first encounter with this guy or girl, and you want to know a little bit about this person. So now he starts to tell you about his family. Oh, you're married? How long are you married? You have kids? Do they play sports? Mm-hmm. All this. And people would say, I can't be bothered with that. I'm like, well, then you're not going to be a good interrogator. Because you need to be involved in this person. You need to build this rapport. And then from there, you start with a timeline. Like, tell me about your day. Not like, were you at Macy's in the parking lot at 10 o'clock on Friday? Like, you don't start there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But some people do, because they don't have a plan. They don't, in their mind, and they haven't thought it out how they're going to ask these series of questions. And so from that, I like to build a timeline and then just, you know, slowly ask questions. Now, the key is, when you're in there, for me anyway, I'm a type A personality. I'm a sore loser. I'm going to admit that. And I probably lost plenty of battles in the interrogation room. I'm not going to sit here and tell you I win every one, because that's a joke and that's a lie. And that's, you know, there are people that will tell you that, but I'm not going to be that guy. But you want to learn as much as you can about this person, and then start asking the relevant questions. Now, if the guy says something that is exciting, that you're like, oh, I want to, you know, you don't necessarily and probably should not follow up on that question immediately. You know, make a mental note of it. Or if you're in there with a partner, let him make a note of it. And then maybe 15 minutes later, come back and ask a follow-up question on something that's relevant. Because if you focus in on like, you have like five questions you want answered, you know, to kind of lock this person into what it is that he did or didn't do. If you go, you know, steps one through five, questions one through five, you're really doing yourself a disservice, because there's no rule about when you have to ask that question versus another question.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no rule that says you have to ask all five of them. Some questions answer themselves.
Yeah.
So you got to take your time. You know, if you're looking at your watch and thinking, you know, my kid's got a soccer game and I really like to go to that, like, well, then policing is probably not for you, because interrogations take time and you have to be able to stay with it and stay focused. And there's all other things that play into it, but that's just on the communication level that I'm speaking of.
And generally you only get one shot. So you bet as well, you have to be prepared. You have to have your shit together before you go in there.
Yeah.
So you pivoting again, Chris, again, so you retire After several years of dedicated service in law enforcement, you retire, you move with the family to Virginia. What happens next?
Well, you know, I had the great retirement party. I got the gold ring. And the
I read it. It's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it was emotional, you know, I was leaving on a high note. I have to be honest with you, I worked with some amazing people that really made me look like a superstar. And I love these people. I keep in touch with these people to this day. Mm-hmm. It's really like an extended family. My kids call, like my one friend, Sean, they call him Uncle Sean. They've known Sean since they were in diapers. You know what I mean? So it's this isn't like a short relationship. So, but I retire and I move to Virginia, and the thought is I'm going to do construction, and I like working with my hands, and there's some level of satisfaction of doing something that, or building something or fixing something for somebody and them saying, hey, I like it. And the bonus is obviously getting paid. So I'm working with a guy, and I had known this person in New York. And after about 9 months, I'm like, I can't work with this person anymore. So now I'm unemployed and I have a pension. So it's not like I don't have a source of income, but I'm 48 years old. Like, what am I going to do for the rest of my life? And my kids are in grammar school. I think one was in middle school.
Yeah.
So from there, I ended up applying for a bunch of different jobs. And I'm actually in my basement painting, and I get a phone call, and I'm debating with myself. I'm having this internal conversation. Do I even want to answer this phone? Because I'm like, I finally got, you know, I'm on a roll. Like, I don't know, you know, it's probably spam even then, you know, who knew what it was? I don't recognize the number. So I end up answering the phone, and it turns out it's a gentleman from L3 Communications, MPRI, which is Military Police Resources International. And he says, hey, you know, I'm reading over your resume, and you know, it looks like you'd be a good fit. And, you know, we have this job and you'd be basically a law enforcement advisor in Iraq. And, you know, is that something you'd be interested in? And I'm like, yeah, it sounds like I'd be interested in it. I said, I'm just going to run it by my wife just to make sure she's good with it. Cause it was going to be a 1 year commitment. And that's a long time. That's not 6 months, which is still pretty long, but a 1 year commitment is a long time. I accept the job. And now I'm going for some onboarding and in-service training in Lansdowne, Virginia. And I'm there for about 10 days. And then what happens is I get called by the program manager to come to his office. And it's me and two other gentlemen. And one of them ends up coming on our team, this fellow by the name of Lou DeAnda. And I'm saying to myself, why are they calling me? Like, are they going to give me the bad news? Like, yeah, you know, you're really not a good fit. Or like, I my mind went to something negative instead of this could be something positive. Mm-hmm. And so I get in the office and they close the door, and two of the other assistant program managers are there. And they say, listen, we're going over your resumes. There's another project being spun up by JIATA, which is the Joint Improvised Explosive Device Defeat Organization. You know, the Army loves an acronym.
Yeah.
And so does the NYPD for that matter. And they described this program. And now, instead of just being an advisor, I was going to be embedded with a group of regular active duty Army soldiers, and the team would consist of a bunch of retired Special Forces guys. And they described the mission as actually going out on direct targeting missions, combat missions, finding the bad guy, and my purpose would be to interrogate the person on the battlefield, on the spot, at 3 o'clock in the morning.
We'll be right back with Chris Strum.
Do you know someone with a drug or alcohol problem? Get help right now. Insurance may cover everything. Stop the drug and alcohol nightmare. Are drug and alcohol problems hitting you too close to home? Get help right now. Insurance may cover everything.
800-210-7907. 800-210-7907. 800-210-7907. That's 800-210-7907.
This is a national healthcare alert from the 24/7 Diabetic Health Hotline. If you, a family member, or a loved one has diabetes, listen closely. Now, regardless of your age, if you have insurance, you may qualify to receive diabetic testing supplies with little to no out-of-pocket cost. Get free delivery, free information, and all the paperwork is handled by our accredited suppliers for free. Call the 24/7 Diabetic Health Hotline now for details. Toll free at this number. But wait, there's more. If you call right now, you could get a meter upgrade. In addition, we'll give you a free pair of diabetic socks as our special gift to you. Regardless of your age, if you suffer with diabetes and have insurance, you may qualify to get free delivery of your supplies.
800-443-1549. 800-443-1549. 800-443-1549. That's 800-443-1549.
And we're back talking with Chris Strum.
I finished this meeting and, you know, they're describing this project. And it's now, instead of just being a law enforcement advisor, I'm actually going to be doing combat missions and I'm going to be at the point of capture. And my job is going to be to interrogate these demon insurgents that are killing our soldiers. Mm-hmm. So they asked me again, are you interested? Because this is a little bit higher risk and this is going to require a different level of commitment and security clearances and things like that. And I said, I'm definitely interested. They said, okay, great. You guys, meaning me and this other fellow, Lou, and this other fellow by the name of El, his real name is El Al Madawi. He's an Egyptian fellow from New York. And they're like, you guys need to go to this meeting in Reston, Virginia, in a place called Crystal City, and you'll get a briefing there from the guys from Jaido. I'm like, cool. So I get there, and you know, they're going through the magnetometer, taking my cell phone, give me an ID card, and they put us in the elevator, and we have to be like buzzed in, and you know, and I sit down, and in walks an Australian major, and he starts giving me the briefing on this mission. So, you know, being a cop, I pull out my pen and I get ready to take some notes, and the guy goes, there's not going to be any notes here, boys, no notes.
So
I said, oh, okay, I'm misinformed. And I put my pencil down or my pen down, and he describes the mission essentially the way I just described it. And he's telling us about the different elements that are going to be involved in this. He's going to have canine tracking dogs, human foot tracking people, drone platforms, you know, human intelligence people, technical exploitation people, which is the nice name and fancy word for the computer guys, and an intel analyst that will be dedicated for this mission only. And then, of course, me as the interrogator. So I'm like, I'm in. Like, you know, sign me up. Yeah, yeah. It sounds really exciting.
And a lot of it, I mean, still people don't know, and you hit something that human intelligence, and I think a lot of people out there, and you hit on it, Chris, they don't realize that you need boots on the ground. You need that people like you over there getting intelligence in interrogations. A lot of people think you could just get it from a drone. You can get it from technology. Human intelligence is key. You know, it is over in Iraq and Afghanistan, but a lot of people don't look at it that way, right?
No, there's really three disciplines of intelligence, you know, but human intelligence far and away carries the day. And I'll give you an example. And I've been doing some teaching myself. And one of the things I love to do is show like a drone picture or maybe even a live drone feed. And, you know, and assuming we're looking at a target and we're looking at bad guys and things of that nature, and or it might even be a still photograph. And I say to the people, what's missing here? Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is a class of intelligence officers or soon to be intelligence officers. And they're like, what do you mean? What's missing? I'm like, well, what can you decipher from this picture? They're like, well, you know, there's a couple buildings here. And if you had the arrow, that's north and looks like there's some trucks and looks like there's some telephone poles. I'm like, okay, but what's missing from this picture? Like, it's great to have this picture. Obviously, if you're going to do a raid on this target location, but what's missing? Mm-hmm. And they just kind of look at you and I'm like, how about how many people are inside the building? Yeah. How about the kind of weapons that may or may not be in the building? How about, are there any explosives in the building? How about, is there an escape route from this building? You know, all different things that it's great when you have electronic surveillance, and I'm not knocking it because it's an essential tool, but you can't action a target, or you really shouldn't action a target unless you have some human intelligence, because it's very, very dangerous. It's very dangerous. So then I go from that to, okay, well, now you've done as much research as you can. Maybe you've set up cameras. You kind of get the battle rhythm, the people coming and going, the configuration, the people, you know, how do you get inside there?
Yeah.
You know, is it possible to get inside there? Can we get a human element in there? Can we get a confidential informant in there? And how would you go about that? How would you go about recruiting somebody like that? How would you go about pitching them? You know, how does that happen? You know, so it's a big, huge human intelligence cycle that The interrogation is really the last part, because now, assuming everything else has been done right, we actually have the body or the target that we're looking for, and now we're going to get more human intelligence based on the interrogator from this interview or interrogation.
Yeah. It's just so, the book is so amazing. Like I said, you know, I got done reading it a couple days ago. Everybody must read this book. And I love how you talk about, you know, your journey before you even get over there. But when you're there, you were kind of concerned of whether or not you were going to fit in. You know, you got Delta guys and SEALs and all these other, you know, Rangers and all these other people over there, but you quickly became pretty tight with a lot of these guys. Some of them were jackasses, like it's in every, you know, every service, but you became tight with these guys. You had to.
Yeah. I gotta be honest with you. The team was great. Like I said before, the genius of the success was the team itself. And, yeah. You know, in the beginning we had a tough go. I mean, like the first 6 months, there was several iterations. So I was there for 15 months, but the first iteration was 6 months. And the original teammates from that, the only people that stayed around was myself and this other fellow, Lou. Everybody else had rotated out. And that team, in terms of leadership for the team, was horrible. So they didn't do anything to help themselves with the Army to make the Army say, hey, I want to send these guys out because, you know, they're switched on and they know what they're doing. It really became who was going to do something stupid. And it's in the book, but who was going to do something more stupid to uningratiate us with the Army. Fast forward, the second iteration comes in, and most of those guys stayed for another year, for another 12 months. And it, or yeah, 12 months. And it was incredible. And now the Army is going from being reluctant to even wanting to use us to where like, let's get the Phoenix team and let's send these guys out, because we became problem solvers. Mm-hmm. And they realized that we were there not to be limelight stealers. You know, there was some reluctance on that, and not to tell them how to do their job, although we did do that at certain points of time, but we kind of like mentored them and showed them a better way. And as you might expect, you know, I'm 20 some odd years in police business. Okay. You got a soldier that's 19 years old and he's being tasked with being, you know, prior to us arriving, as being an interrogator. Well, I got to be honest with you. At 19 years of age, if they had given me that job, I would have sucked at it. I would have really sucked at it. And, you know, and these kids kind of sucked at it too. But more than that, you have a whole cultural thing in an Arab culture where if you're 19 years old and you're talking to a 30, 40-year-old man that's an Arab male, Iraqi, or wherever, that in and of itself culture is insulting. They don't even want to talk to you because there's no respect. And it's almost like, you know, aside from even having a woman do it, which sometimes mm-hmm. was the case too, it's just not something that's done culturally. It's very offensive. Yeah. So these are all these different challenges that once we kind of got everything ironed out, now we're rolling out with the Army. And I mean, we're at the point of exhaustion. We are going 18, 24, 36 hours a day watching the sunrise twice. And now the Army, that this team that we work with, this one particular team, 122 TST, Tactical Strike Team, was run by this guy named Sergeant Dave, who I'm super close with. And it got to the point they wouldn't go out without us, because now we were almost like, not only were we doing the interrogations, but we were doing all the intelligence. We were collecting and bagging and tagging all the evidence that pointed directly to these Al-Qaeda and Jaish-e al-Mahdi cells. So their work is provide the security cordon, breach the entry, secure the house, and then we walk in and it's like one-stop shopping. Everything is all tied up neatly into a bow. I write the interrogation report. My friend Matt would write the human intelligence mm-hmm. package. We deliver all the evidence. And now these guys who were, and again, I want to be clear, I love the soldiers, any soldiers. I don't care if it's Army, Marine Corps, whatever. But these kids became very, very popular on the base. So I'll give you an analogy. Everybody knows or has seen on TV where, you know, there's a police chase and a foot chase and maybe a gun recovered. And that cop comes in and everybody's like, yeah, right on, man, that was good. Or the girl, that was a great collar, blah, 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 blah. And now, you know, the afterglow. You leave mm-hmm. work and now maybe, you know, you stop by your local watering hole and there's a few, you know, conversations and some beverages that are being handed out. Now, the Army, similarly, the same thing is happening. So these are guys that are coming back and they are taking out tier one and tier two targets, high value targets. And now they're in the cafeteria, the DFAC, the dining facility. Mm-hmm. And they're pretty popular with the opposite sex, whether it was a guy or a girl. And they're like, yeah, man, you're like, they're walking around and their chest is out and they should be proud. I'm proud of them. I'm proud of all of them. And I love them. And that feeling of making them look good, like, I can't even explain to you how gratifying and how yeah. satisfying that was. And the pride as a team working together. Cause in the beginning, like I said, wasn't working out so well. And then toward the end, it was awesome. It was incredible.
Yeah. Well, you sacrificed a lot, brother. I mean, going over there, I know you have an amazing family, amazing wife that supported you, going over there and doing this great work, for assisting the military and protecting our country. I mean, we still have a presence over there. You know that, Chris, in Afghanistan and Iraq. And it seems like you never hear about the fight that is still going on over there. I know there's been a reduction in forces, you probably know, in Iraq and Afghanistan. But you never hear about it anymore. And I think it's important that we remember that the brave men and women who are still over there and not here. And I know you know that, but irritates me sometimes when you don't hear about this or very little about it in the news cycle. So,
yeah. Yeah, listen, everybody, there's like a bunch of things that go out on Facebook and on LinkedIn that says red, remember everybody deployed.
Yeah.
And, I remember, and I know you do, anyone that served or has been in law enforcement or has a family member, it touches you personally. And, I don't want to just hear about another soldier getting killed. I mean? I'm done with it, And in terms of Iraq, the level of corruption that was going on and the level of success that was going on, in spite of the level of corruption, between the Iraqi government being complicit, between people of the military and our own intelligence services basically sponsoring terrorism, it's terribly frustrating. And yeah. I'm, like I said, I've already admitted I'm a sore loser, and I could accept losing. If I've done my best, that's part of life. You don't win everything. That's just part of life. But what I can't accept, and I really have a hard time to get frustrated with, is that you're limiting my success. You're standing in the way of my success or the team's success or the military success because you have an agenda or you have a career aspiration. And that is what's terrible about what's going on there, because nobody could tell you, other than parroting, the mission statement, what is the objective in Iraq? What is the objective in Afghanistan? Like, nobody can tell you. Yeah. They have PhDs that they're professors on college. They write their thesis on this. They can't define what it is that we're supposed to be doing over there. What is the mission statement?
Yeah, it's so, it's like law enforcement, brother. It's political, it's agendas. It's all it is.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, Chris Strom, thank you so much for coming on the show, sir. Your service to this great country, your service in law enforcement. If people want to get your book, and everybody, I read the book. It's an amazing book, Brooklyn to Baghdad, an NYPD intelligent cop fights terror in Iraq. Must read. It'll be in the show notes. Where can people reach out to you, brother? Where can people find your book?
It's definitely on Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, Walmart, Target. If you type in Brooklyn to Baghdad, all kinds of information pops up. If they type in my name in a search engine, Christopher Strom, you'll find me on Facebook. You'll find me on Instagram and Twitter. There's many, many ways. If people direct message me on LinkedIn, I'm under Intel Investigations and Security. If they inbox message me, I'll definitely exchange emails with them and put them in touch or where they could get the book, or if they send it to me, I'll sign it and send it back to them. Any way possible to get the word out, I will do.
And I have a signed copy, folks. So you need to get one from the one and only Chris Strom. Thank you, brother, for coming on the show. Please be safe. If there's anything we can do for you, you're already successful, but whatever we can do for you to get more success coming your way, you let me know, brother.
Thank you so much, Patrick. I really enjoyed being on your show, and thanks again for having me.
I appreciate it, brother.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.